Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening up a really fascinating piece of source material. It's an article from the Beaver County Almanac.
Right, yeah.
And it's written by the publication's editor and publisher, Roger Morrow. The piece is called The Last Local Man on the Radio.
It's a great title.
It really is. And our mission today is to unpack this this very specific modern paradox. We want to figure out why, in an age where we have literally the entire globe accessible on the smartphones in our pockets, we are rapidly losing connection to our own backyards.
Yeah, that disconnect is huge.
It is. So we're going to look at what it actually takes to preserve the identity of a hometown before it, you know, just fades away entirely.
And the lens Morrow uses for this exploration is hyperlocal, which I think makes it incredibly effective.
Mm-hmm.
He traces the career of a local journalism fixture named Scott Tanney.
Mm.
And what makes the narrative so compelling is the shared foundation between the author and the subject.
Right.
Roger Morrow and Scott Tanney actually grew up only a few miles apart in Beaver County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, they share the exact same regional DNA.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does. And Morrow uses Tacky's career evolution to kind of map out a massive national shift in how communities see themselves. Or, well, increasingly how they fail to see themselves when traditional local media vanishes.
That concept of, you know, seeing a community, it really makes me think about how we navigate the world today versus how we actually experience it.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you pull out your phone right now and open up a map app, you can zoom in on almost any street in the world.
Right. Yeah.
You can look at a tiny coastal village halfway across the globe, and the satellite imagery shows you everything, down to the color of the front doors.
Yeah, resolution is wild.
It is. It gives you this illusion of absolute clarity. It feels like total geographic omniscience, you know?
It does. The technology captures the spatial data flawlessly. It's just a perfect grid of coordinates.
Exactly. But then you apply that same app to the town where you actually live. The map shows the streets laid out correctly, sure, but it is entirely blind to the lived reality of the place. Oh, right.
It doesn't show you that the Italian restaurant on the corner closed 3 years ago and everyone still misses their garlic bread.
Yeah.
It doesn't indicate that the basement of a specific dive bar is where every decent local indie band gets their start. And it definitely doesn't warn you about the pothole on Main Street that will, you know, completely destroy your suspension.
Right. It doesn't know any of that.
The map is crystal clear, but the shared culture, the actual heartbeat of the community, is just completely invisible to the software.
And that gap, the gap between that digital grid and the cultural reality, that is where local journalism traditionally lived.
Right.
Morrow captures this perfectly by taking us back to Taddy's origins. He grew up in what the text refers to as a two-newspaper household.
Oh, man, I remember those.
Yeah, right. For anyone who didn't grow up in that era, having the morning paper and the afternoon paper, in this case, the Pittsburgh Press and the Post-Gazette, arriving on the doorstep was just the absolute gold standard of civic engagement.
It was a whole ritual. It really was. But Taddy's entry point into this world wasn't the hard news.
No.
As a kid, he would grab the paper, totally bypass the front page, and flip straight to the Pirates box scores.
Of course.
Right. And then he'd stumble onto the concert reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where a light bulb went off for him.
Yeah, he realized there was this loophole in the American work ethic.
Exactly.
He saw adults whose perfectly respectable paying job was to stay out late, go to rock and roll concerts, and then write a few hundred words the next morning, judging the talent of a local guitarist.
It sounds like a purely frivolous pursuit on the surface, doesn't it?
It really does.
Getting paid to critique a guitar solo at a dive bar just doesn't sound like critical civic infrastructure.
But see, I kept chewing on that idea while reading the piece, and I came away with a completely different view.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think a local entertainment reporter is essentially a town historian in a leather jacket.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Right, because on paper, reviewing a weekend festival or rating a new diner, it seems lightweight, but you peel back a layer and you realize this is vital community memory keeping. They're cataloging the mundane culture of a town before it just becomes history.
And Morrow articulates the sociology of this beautifully in the Almanac.
He really does.
He points out that when you ask someone about the place where they grew up, they do not begin by reciting the names of the county commissioners.
Right. Nobody cares about that.
No, or detailing the municipal tax code. They map out their hometown through social landmarks.
Yeah.
They tell you about the diner their parents took them to after Sunday church.
Yeah.
Or they describe a vanished summer amusement park.
The stuff that actually mattered to their daily lives.
Exactly. In Beaver County, they talk about Bocktown Tavern, which is a place where seemingly everyone ended up eventually.
Right.
They talk about seeing a local band before anyone knew their name. These businesses and bands, they are the actual anchors of a shared identity.
And without someone actively writing those details down, those anchors just evaporate the moment the building gets torn down or the band breaks up.
They're just gone.
The memory of the place vanishes. I mean, if you are listening to this right now on your commute or while you're walking the dog, think about your own hometown.
Yeah, try to picture it.
Think about the places that defined your teenage years that are now just empty lots or, you know, chain pharmacies.
It's kind of sad to think about.
It is. Who was recording the history of those spots when they were alive?
Well, historically, the economic model of local newspapers subsidized that memory keeping almost by accident.
How do you mean?
Well, the classified ads and the big car dealership spreads, they paid for the newsroom.
Oh, right. The revenue side.
Yeah. Which meant the publisher could afford to send an entertainment writer to a basement concert or send a photographer to the 4th of July parade.
It wasn't some big strategy.
No. As Morrow notes, nobody in the newsroom held meetings to strategize about corporate community engagement.
Right.
It was simply Tuesday. It was life being recorded in real time by the people who shared that exact same zip code.
And so, Taney eventually leveraged his passion into a role at the Beaver County Times as their entertainment reporter.
He did.
He spent years interviewing passing celebrities and covering local spots, and he became a household name in the area. But his real impact wasn't just observing the culture. He actively cultivated it.
That's a really important distinction.
It is. And this is where we have to look at the mechanics of how local scenes grow organically versus how they are, you know, engineered today.
Right.
Taney wasn't just a passive reviewer. When he saw raw potential, he threw his entire weight behind it.
The story of Billy Godwin in the text is the perfect case study for this.
Yes. Tell that story.
So Godwin was a local Beaver County guitarist. Taney hears him play and realizes this guy possesses a rare talent that just deserves a much wider audience.
Mm-hmm.
So Taney goes far beyond writing a standard 500-word review. He basically transforms it into an evangelist.
Yeah, he takes it on as a mission.
Right. He starts direct messaging his contacts in Pittsburgh radio. He physically corners people in hallways, demanding they listen to Godwin and give him airplay.
Wow.
He leverages his own social capital to advocate for a neighbor.
Okay, so I want to play devil's advocate for the modern digital era right here.
All right, let's hear it.
Because someone listening might think that a local guy cornering a radio DJ in a hallway is an incredibly inefficient way to break a new artist.
Sure, by today's standards.
Right. I mean, isn't a modern algorithm just a highly efficient, completely unbiased version of Scott Taddy?
That's the argument, yeah.
If Billy Godwin is talented today, he just uploads his track to a streaming service.
Yeah.
The algorithm uses collaborative filtering. It sees listeners not skipping the track. And it automatically pushes it to thousands of people who enjoy that specific genre.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't technology completely remove the bottleneck of needing a local gatekeeper?
Well, that is the utopian promise of algorithmic curation.
Mm.
But the reality of how those systems operate is entirely different.
Okay, break that down for me.
An algorithm relies on behavioral clustering and massive data sets. It requires a seed audience to generate the metrics.
Like what kind of metrics?
You know, completion rates, skip rates, replay value. It needs all that before it will push a song to a wider audience.
Oh, I see.
If Taylor Swift drops a track this morning, the algorithm has millions of instant data points and pushes it globally within seconds.
Right, because the data is already there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But an algorithm has absolutely zero geographic awareness. It has no way of knowing that a kid playing guitar 15 miles down the road has raw potential.
Because there's no initial data to parse.
Exactly. There's no data.
So it's completely blind to potential. It can only measure what has already happened. It curates popularity rather than advocating for quality.
That is a perfect way to put it. Furthermore, an algorithm lacks the mechanism of human conviction.
Human conviction, right.
When Taney was pushing for Billy Godwin, he wasn't looking at a spreadsheet of listener retention metrics.
Right. He wasn't looking at skip rates.
No. He was looking a peer in the eye and staking his decades of built-up personal credibility on a recommendation.
Yeah.
He was saying, I know music, I know this town, and I am telling you to pay attention to this guy.
And the algorithm has no stake in the cultural vibrancy of Beaver County.
None at all. It doesn't care if a local music scene thrives or dies. Teddy did, because he lived there.
And so when the local newspaper infrastructure begins to hollow out, which is this massive systemic shift we've seen over the last two decades, as digital ads basically decimated print revenue.
Nope, absolutely decimated it.
Right. You don't just lose the daily box scores. You lose the evangelists.
Yeah.
You lose the people whose full-time job is to care about the cultural vibrancy of a specific zip code.
Yeah.
Which really forces us to ask, when the print newsroom can no longer sustain them, where do these vital local voices go?
They have to find a new megaphone.
Right.
For Tatey, that meant looking past the printing press and pivoting to a medium that can still offer what newspapers were struggling to provide.
Which was radio.
Exactly. He moved to the radio. And this transition is driven by Frank Sparks.
Right. The general manager at WBVP and WMBA.
Yes. Frank Sparks is a crucial part of this ecosystem. He isn't some distant executive sitting in a corner office just managing spreadsheets.
No, not at all.
He hosts his own locally grounded news talk show every single weekday from 10 a.m. to noon.
He is right in the trenches of local broadcasting.
Yes, talking to the community every day.
Yeah.
Frank Sparks, Scott Tatey, and Roger Morrow, they all share this deep, abiding love for local journalism, specifically of the Beaver County variety.
They all get it.
They do. They all recognize the intrinsic value of that shared soil. So in 2017, Sparks looked at Tatey and recognized that Tatey's value to the community wasn't dependent on ink and paper.
Right.
His real value was his reporting instincts, his deep network of local contacts, and just this massive database of regional history he carried around in his head.
Yeah.
So Sparks brought Tatey onto the stations to host a weekly half-hour program called Notes on Local Entertainment.
The mechanics of how a print journalist adapts to live radio, that's just fascinating to me.
It's a huge shift.
It is. It's like moving from a recording studio where you can do 20 takes and edit everything perfectly to playing live on a stage with absolutely no safety net.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
But the sheer velocity of the radio medium provides an incredible advantage.
Oh, definitely.
In print, you are locked into this rigid 24-hour manufacturing cycle.
Right.
If you attend a contentious town hall meeting, you have to write the piece, send it to an editor, wait for the page layout, physically print the paper, and then get it thrown onto a driveway the next morning.
It takes so much time. And that velocity completely changes the relationship with the audience.
How so?
Well, radio bypasses the manufacturing delay entirely. It moves from being a historical record of yesterday to a real-time conversation about today.
Oh, it's so true.
If a beloved local restaurant abruptly closes its doors or a sudden storm floods a specific intersection, Tatey and Sparks can talk about it on the air 10 minutes later. It actually matches the real speed of a living community.
And beyond the speed, there is a profound emotional shift in how the audience receives the information.
Yeah, Morrow uses an incredibly vivid metaphor in his piece to contrast the two mediums.
I loved this part.
Yeah, he describes how a newspaper reporter enters your house folded beneath somebody's arm.
Right.
It is a physical object you actively choose to bring inside and unfold. It requires dedicated attention.
You have to sit down with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But a radio personality functions entirely differently. They ride around with you in the passenger seat of your car.
Yeah.
They sit on the kitchen counter while you make your morning coffee.
It creates a parasocial relationship, but one that is hyper-localized.
Exactly.
The voice becomes seamlessly integrated into the daily routine of the listener. I mean, after enough mornings of hearing that specific voice while you are stuck in traffic on the way to the local mill or while you're, you know, pouring your cereal, the psychological distance just vanishes.
You really begin to feel like you are just listening to a knowledgeable neighbor.
Yeah.
The intimacy of the human voice carries an empathy that text on a page often just struggles to convey.
The intimacy is definitely undeniable, but I have to push back on the inherent danger of that format.
Okay. What are you thinking?
Well, when you move away from the structured environment of a newspaper, where you have copy editors, fact checkers, and this traditional editorial hierarchy.
Right.
And you put someone behind a live microphone, doesn't that invite a massive drop in factual rigor?
Yeah, it's a fair point.
It seems like it would be incredibly easy to trade verified, hard-fought reporting for just a couple of guys chatting and accidentally amplifying local rumors.
Well, you've identified the exact vulnerability of talk radio when it exists in a vacuum.
Right.
The format can very easily devolve into baseless speculation.
Yeah.
But this is where Tatey's specific professional background, becomes his superpower on the airwaves.
Oh, because of his print days?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Morrow points out that Tatey's decades in the print newspaper business provide crucial ballast to his radio presence.
Ballast, like the heavy weight placed in the hull of a ship to keep it from capsizing in rough water.
Precisely. Because Tatey was trained relentlessly as a print reporter, he fundamentally understands the mechanics of verification.
He knows how to check things.
Right. He knows, deeply and instinctively, the difference between a juicy rumor somebody told him at Bocktown Tavern and a fact that can actually be proven with public records or on-the-record quotes.
Right.
He carries the ethical framework of a newsroom right into the radio booth. He isn't just shooting from the hip to fill airtime.
And his deep roots in Beaver County provide a different but equally important kind of rigor.
Absolutely.
An outsider could parachute into town with a journalism degree and perfectly verify the facts of a zoning board meeting, but they wouldn't understand the invisible fault lines of the town.
No, they wouldn't have the context.
Right. Tatey knows that every single story in Beaver County has a long, complicated history. If an old building is being sold, he knows it's not just a real estate transaction.
Right. It's the site where the mill workers went on strike 30 years ago.
Exactly. He knows the lineage of the local grievances.
And Morrow highlights this brilliantly by noting that in a town like that, every story usually has an uncle who remembers it entirely differently.
I love that line.
It's so true, right? You cannot fake that kind of contextual awareness. You can only earn it by sharing the same zip code for decades.
Yeah.
That local ballast is what elevates a radio show from casual banter into a vital community resource. It successfully merges the integrity of traditional journalism with the accessible, intimate delivery of a conversation.
So, pulling all these threads together, we arrive at the overarching thesis of Morrow's piece in the Almanac.
Yeah, it all comes back to that.
Through the story of Scott Tatey, Morrow forces us to confront the ultimate modern paradox of our media diet.
Which is?
Thanks to smartphones, streaming algorithms, and global fiber optic networks, we have more access to the world than any generation in human history.
That's true.
I mean, I can sit in my living room and stream a live concert from Reykjavik while simultaneously reading breaking news from Johannesburg.
The geographic barriers to information have been completely eradicated.
Exactly. But the unintended cost of that global access, however, has been a severe hollowing out of our immediate surroundings.
Yeah, that's the tragedy of it.
As our attention is drawn outward to national political dramas and global entertainment trends, the economic models that supported local storytellers just collapse.
And as Morrow puts it so bluntly, the tragedy of the digital age is that we're losing access to the places where we actually live.
It is a really sobering realization. The technological landscape has changed enormously since Scott Tatey was a kid reading concert reviews in the Pittsburgh Press.
Completely different world.
The physical newspapers have shrunk to a fraction of their former size, and radio stations have increasingly consolidated into massive, nationally syndicated conglomerates.
Right.
But the fundamental sociological needs of a community, they haven't changed one bit.
No, they really haven't. Someone still needs to do the work. Someone still needs to track the local musicians before they become famous. Or, you know, just as importantly, chronicle them even if they never do.
Yeah.
Someone still needs to document the quirky tavern that closed down, because that tavern was a landmark of collective memory.
Someone still has to look the county commissioner in the eye and ask the specific, hyper-local, angry question that everyone in town is muttering about over breakfast at the diner.
Right, because the algorithm is never going to ask the commissioner about the potholes on Main Street.
No, it has no idea they exist.
The medium shifted. The delivery mechanism moved from ink on a printing press to invisible airwaves bouncing off a radio tower.
Yeah.
But the job itself, the job of the local voice, remained exactly the same.
It is the active practice of listening for the sound of a place becoming itself and then reflecting that sound back to the people who live there.
Well said. It still requires someone to occasionally corner a friend in a hallway in Pittsburgh and say, you really ought to listen to this guy.
Right. The community memory keeping has to remain if a town is going to survive as a distinct cultural entity, rather than just a collection of houses near a highway.
If you lose the local advocates, you just lose the cohesive narrative of the town.
Let's bring this all the way back to the image we started with. Think about that map app on your phone again.
Okay.
The one with perfect, unfeeling clarity. It knows exactly where the streets cross. It knows the exact elevation of the terrain.
Right.
It can calculate the mathematically fastest route to the grocery store. But it doesn't know Tuesday.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't know what a Tuesday afternoon in Beaver County actually feels like or sounds like or means to the people who live there.
Only a local voice can map the culture.
So I want to leave everyone listening with a thought to mull over as they go about their day. Think about your own hometown. Think about the specific taverns, the high school bands, and the weird, quirky characters that everyone locally just seems to know. If those shared memories are the things that truly define a sense of place, what happens to a generation's shared identity when there is no local voice left to accidentally record their Tuesday?
That's a huge question.
Do our hometowns eventually stop being distinct living communities and just become geographical coordinates on a digital map?
It's something to consider the next time you plug an address into your phone.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.